Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey guys, welcome to this very special episode of TFL Car Chat, because I've got probably our most popular guest that we've ever had on the show, and that of course is Motoman. Motoman, thank you for joining.
Roman, thank you for having me, or I should say thank you for coming to my home state.
Yes, we're here in California. We just got done, me and Gavin, our videographer, got done driving the EX90.
Don't tell me about it.
I'm not going to tell you
about it. Because I'm driving it tomorrow.
Yeah, I'm not going to tell you. Plus, it's embargoed, so I can't tell you.
I'd have to kill you?
You'd have to kill me. Yeah. So, we're here, just outside of Newport?
Yeah, well, actually, we're on Newport Coast is what they call it.
Yes.
Newport Coast, because here you have to drive either the Jaguar or the Range Rover.
Or the G-Wagon. I've seen a lot of those.
True story. You want to hear a complete true story?
Yeah, let's hear it.
So, we live and die based on views, right?
Of course.
So, the most viewed Instagram reel I put on my Instagram was of a Morgan Super 3 just outside this hotel. This is the Pelican Hill Resort. And I was in between an Aston Martin DB11 and a G-Wagon. And I'm in the car, and my passenger takes a quick video of me saying, there's an Aston Martin, there's a G-Wagon, which car gets more attention? It did like 7 million views.
Dang.
Here at the Newport Coast.
All right, you guys, 7 million views. I'm throwing it out there. You can't see it, but we're looking at the beautiful Pacific Ocean.
It is gorgeous.
Really is. Yeah. So you may be wondering what we're going to be talking about. Well, usually when me and him get together, we kind of talk about the state of the automotive economy. And you just came back from Pebble Beach at Monterey.
Car Week, yes.
Yeah. So let's just start with that. I mean, what did you see there that met your interest?
Well, of course, old cars, you and I generally don't talk about old cars because there's not a lot of views on old cars. And I don't want to get off on that tangent for that. We can talk about that somewhere else. But there were two interesting trends that came out of it.
All right, let's see.
Number one, it is fully a new car show at this point. No exaggeration. There's Quail, which is a major car event. There's Pebble Beach. And then there's obviously the events that go on at the track, the historic races. There are other events like Concours de Lemon, which is fun, that kind of stuff. But the big takeaway from both Pebble Beach as well as Quail, it's more of a new car show than a classic car show, and I'll tell you why. I haven't seen, so what you guys don't see behind the scenes that we see, we go to like Chicago Auto Show, New York Auto Show, LA Auto Show, and you have like every 10 minutes scheduled as a press conference.
And a reveal, yeah.
We haven't seen that in 5 years at a regular auto show.
No, you may get one or two and then like refreshes, but nothing like it used to be. I remember, there were just mind-blowing, crazy cars that came out, and they were important, and they were interesting, and that all went away.
Well, not even Pebble Beach. Quail Lodge, the big event, Quail Motorsports Gathering, they had, I want to say, at least 15 to 20 press conferences, but most importantly, they had the world reveal of the new Lincoln Navigator at a classic car event, and the replacement for the Huracan, which is now a V8 hybrid.
Yeah, I got to drive what's the other one called?
Revuelto,
yeah.
I was jealous. I was kind of pissed at you.
Yeah, two things. I'll tell you a story that you'll appreciate, and I've never told anybody because it has to do with some health issues that I have, but I'll tell it because it's pretty funny. What I wanted to say is that week has kind of replaced the Geneva Auto Show.
Completely.
The Geneva Auto Show used to be kind of the place you would go if you were very wealthy, and that Bugatti Chiron was unveiled there, and then, Koenigsegg was there, and it was just these Ferrari unveiled a lot of cars there, and that's all gone. The Geneva Auto Show actually died, and now it's been replaced by...
Well, it's not dead. It actually lives in the desert. It lives in Qatar.
Yeah, okay. I know, but it's kind of... For all practical purposes, it's dead. Come on.
Hey, podcast listeners and TFL Talk viewers. I wanted to take a minute to talk to you about a quick and simple way to sell your car or truck with the help of our new partner, HiRoad. With HiRoad's online portal, you enter your vehicle's VIN number or plate, mileage, and zip code, and you'll get competing offers from several qualified dealers in your area within seconds. You pick the best deal offered and follow through with the dealer to sell your car. No more managing scammy emails from buyers on Craigslist or Facebook Marketplace. No more time wasted on no-show buyers. No bait and switch with a "will you take a check" excuse from sketchy buyers. Now keep in mind, these offers will be for trade-in values of your vehicle. If you want to go through the hassle of getting more for your car, that's up to you. But if you want to sell your car hassle-free and fast, go to tflcar.com and click Sell Your Car in the navigation menu. Or click on the HiRoad ad at the bottom of the website if you're on mobile, or click on the column if you're on a desktop. HiRoad makes it easy, and we like easy.
All right, so here's what happened with the Walter, right? I've got some medical issues, and I take this medicine. And I don't want to go into the issues, but I take this medicine. If I don't take it, what happens is the world gets really weird. It's kind of like being drunk mm-hmm. without any of the fun part. Mm-hmm. like you're dizzy. You know, you're kind of off balance. Everything's kind of a little bit weird, but there's no, like, euphoria to go with it. Mm-hmm. So I flew to drive the Revolto, and I forgot to take my medicine.
Oh, boy.
And as I'm driving to the racetrack through Rome traffic, I'm like, oh, God, I forgot to take this stuff. And it usually takes a while for these symptoms to come on, right? And I was like, now I got to go drive this, you know, 800 horsepower supercar.
On a racetrack.
Behind,
tough life this guy has.
Behind an Italian race car driver, right? Because it was a lead follow situation. And so we had four you know, turns at the racetrack. Mm-hmm. So I get in the thing and, you know, the guy's really cool. The guy in front of us, he's like, hey, I'll go as fast as you want me to go. So if you push on him, he'll go faster. And if you don't. And so that first one, I was starting to push on him, and I was like, this is great. And the car is actually really great. It's because of all the tech in the car right now, it makes you feel like you're like, well, my generation, Michael Schumacher, your generation, Max Verstappen, it just made you feel young.
Well, I'd like to point out that every time I come on your show, I think I'm the only one that gets away with calling you old that you can't fire. And I get a lot of crap in the comments about that, but you've just confirmed why I call you old. So
fair.
Thank you.
Well, you know, with Nathan being out here, I need somebody to bring me down to earth.
Nathan, that's big news. Like, they don't know this. Nathan is now my neighbor.
Yeah, that's
Nathan
cool.
lives, like, no exaggeration, 4 miles from my hangar.
That's wonderful.
I'd like to point out that I had a huge hand in where he lives for no other reason than I wanted my cigar buddy to be able to come to the hangar and have cigars with me. His wife is not pleased, though. She's not happy
with that. No, I think she doesn't like when he comes home smelling of cigars.
She puts up with it because I'm the one that got her into that area. So anyway.
Yeah, and I heard you got a great house. Anyway, so, like, you know, first session, great. By the second session, I was getting a little weird, right? And I'm like, I'm not going to be the one to wrap this thing around, you know, a pole.
Yeah.
And so by the third session, like, hey, Roman, it's your turn. I'm like, nope, I got everything I need.
You're good.
I'm good. Thank you. Yeah. And I couldn't even go back and get the damn pills because Rome traffic is miserable. And by the time I got back to the hotel and back to the track, it would have been over.
Interesting fun fact. I don't know if your audience is aware of this. The people who make the electric motor in that car, which is like a pancake. It's like annoying. We're driving this EV from Volvo, which has an electric motor. It's like this wide. The motor in that Revuelto, as well as the SF90, as well as the 296 GTB, it's this wide. And it's made by a company called Yasa, which is an English company, and they're owned by Mercedes.
Oh, I remember.
So it's kind of like a Lamborghini-Mercedes collaboration. That's it didn't start out that way, but that's what it is.
All right, well, let's go back to Pebble Beach because, like I say, to me, we don't have the audience for these supercars, you know, so I don't...
Yet you're the one flying off the Lamborghini in Italy to drive the car, and I'm not. How is that?
Well...
I'm a little... You know, you need to start sending me to those events.
I could, yeah. I could start sending you that. I actually did okay with that Lamborghini, so maybe I spoke too soon. We did pretty well with that video because it's such a cool-ass car. Anyway, you know, what I saw coming out of Pebble Beach was that there were some interesting cars, but, you know, these cars are for the super rich.
New cars or classic cars?
New cars, mm-hmm. like at the Quail, right? These were like, except for the Navigator.
Okay, the Navigator was not one of them. They showed a concept of a Cadillac, which will never come to production.
Right.
But here's a car you will love.
A Remax, right, R, 2,000 horsepower.
Put aside all those. That's not for your audience.
Panafinera.
But you know what was there?
What?
they showed the production versions of the Myers Manx, both the electric as well as this crazy radial engine gas version. Like, think about a radial, you know, these guys know I'm a plane guy. And think about a radial engine in like a Warbird where it's 9 cylinders that go in a circle. This thing has 3 cylinders that go in a circle. It looks so cool from the back of the car.
But you know, the problem with that Manx is that it's been one of those cars that's been promised and it's taken them so long to get it out, right? At this point, I've kind of put it in the same category as a Fisker, just these cars that are unobtainium.
So I'm not going to 100% put money down that they're going to be super successful.
Yeah.
But I'm going to give them a better than average chance, and I'll tell you why.
Why?
Because all the people that are behind that company now are the most successful people behind the scenes from other companies. Like, their co-CEO is the woman that ran all of Ford Communications for the Americas.
Okay.
Probably the smartest person I know is that woman. And then Jennifer Flake.
Yeah, I know Jennifer.
Sharpest.
Yeah,
like,
she's sharp as a tack.
And she collects degrees like other people collect stamps.
Yeah.
And then there's Freeman Thomas, who's on the board of directors, and he's the one that brought in Jennifer. And then, of course, there's Frank Cecito, who ran Advanced Design at General Motors.
I hope you're right. I would love to go down the beach on one of those. That would be such a wonderful day.
You got an extra $50,000 that you have still left over, so why don't you buy one of those?
No, we're not going to buy one of those. All right, but let's talk about kind of the trends that came out of there. First and foremost, I was watching.
It's a new car show. That's the biggest trend.
But I'm talking about now the auctions. So I was watching.
Okay,
I was watching Mecum, right? And stuff wasn't selling, dude.
Okay, so we need to.
Some stuff was selling.
We need to separate it from Mecum and everybody else.
Okay.
Mecum is kind of like, they are the Walmart of the classic car auction brand. I don't know. No offense meant there. It's just they touch a broader market. They have a much broader reach. John Crayman, there, a friend of mine. Crazy intelligent when it
comes. The professor?
He is kind of he's the professor of the classic car world. However, they're trying to be everything to all people. They've got the $1 million, the $5 million car, but they make their money in their $30,000
car. Like a GC40, I believe, that belonged. They're selling a Newman car, but this was one of the original GT40s, and it sold for like $7 million.
But
you know what Tommy said, which is true? He said, you know, today's $7 million is mine, and you're, you know, 700,000. I mean, that's really the kind of inflation we're looking at.
You know, I've got a bunch of friends that are in that world.
Yeah.
And they have a great saying. When I go to them and say, hey, should I buy this or should I buy that? The answer is always the same. Buy it while it's cheap. Because think about it. You and I have been in this industry for over 15 years now. And 14 years ago, they couldn't sell Porsche 918s.
Yeah.
Now, one sold for $2.4 million this week.
Yeah, I saw that.
$2.4 million.
Yeah.
But let's get back to the separate.
Okay, so Mecum is kind of its own thing.
It's its own thing.
But then you got Broad Arrow, you got.
So Broad Arrow, which is Hagerty,
yep.
And then you've got RM and you've got Gooding.
Yep.
They're all kind of on the same footing. As a matter of fact, it's kind of an incestuous relationship. All of them started from RM. It's kind of like Lombardi's Pizza in New York. Every other pizza place started
from
Lombardi's.
That was a fountainhead.
It's literally the fountainhead. Yeah. So RM. It was David Gooding that ran RM there when after Rob Meyer started it, he went and founded his own. Then Ian Kelleher started, then he went and started.
So they're going after the same clientele.
They're going the same, exactly. Yeah. Now, the market is down. That's the headline. Technically, it's down in terms of numbers to numbers from last year to this year is down technically 3%. But that doesn't tell you the whole story. The whole story is all of the numbers are not equal. So the cars that are like the low-end stuff, they either didn't sell or sold for half price. Like I saw an 89 E320 convertible went for $19,000. That car is worth $50 all day long. Or on the opposite end of the spectrum, and this is the bigger story, the high-dollar cars, the kind of stuff that sells to people that whether there's good times or bad times, they have money, all of that stuff didn't sell. Or it sold for a lot less.
So there's that saying, like, quality sells. It didn't happen.
Didn't happen. Mm. Those people were sitting on the sidelines. And that tells you, that's the canary in the coal mine, that the economy is about to fall off a cliff.
Interesting.
And now that's going to tie into another discussion about trends we're going to talk about in new car sales.
Yeah, we'll get to that in a second. So, you know, I just think these things it could be a sign of the economy because once upon a time, we had this big middle class, and now we have like billionaires and the rest of us, right?
Well, there's you, and then there's me. You're the billionaire.
Yeah, right.
And I'm the pauper.
No, like, that's what Tommy said. Like, you know, $1 million today was like when I was growing up, 100,000, right? That's that number. And millionaires are a dime a dozen now. I mean, you look around here, like these, you know, multi-million dollar
I did an interesting homes. Study that actually is more telling about this point. So I did an episode where I did a living with a comparison of a new Mustang GT, a Mustang 50th anniversary, so an S550. My father has an S550 50th anniversary, and then a Fox body.
Okay.
And as part of my Living With series, my audience knows this, it's not just like reviewing the car, it's reviewing the car, but also what's the maintenance? What was the resale? What's the specialty, what's the X factor about the car?
Yeah.
And what I learned about that experience, the real dollar price of a Mustang since 1990 to now is exactly the same.
I get that. Yeah,
meaning it hasn't increased in price. However, what did increase, the percentage of the average income to buy that Mustang has gone up by 20%.
Oh, but the insurance increase.
I'm just talking about
the actual car. Yeah.
Your how much the affordability index.
Okay.
So basically, how much of the average income does it take to buy the average Mustang is now it takes 20% more of your income.
Okay. All right. So my point was, maybe it's a sign of the economy. I don't know. I'm sure we'll find out very soon. Or maybe it's a sign that these car prices have gotten so overheated that even very, very wealthy folks are like, hey, this is just out of my league.
Is this where the point of the episode where I talk to you about the price of your future Vita, Volkswagen ID. Buzz?
Yes, let's talk about that. So as you guys know, we ordered a Volkswagen ID. Buzz.
Yeah, I don't think Mr. Billionaire here can afford it.
Hold on. So I went to the LA Auto Show. So the reason we buy cars for the most part, unlike Edmunds that buys cars, or Consumer Reports, right? We're not necessarily consumer-oriented in that regard. We make our money by you guys watching the videos. So I try to pick cars that people are interested in, that there's a lot of, for lack of a better term, buzz around. And when I went to the LA Auto Show, God, when was this when it was introduced? Like 1,500 years ago? You remember that?
I think that was when the Model T was first released. Yeah.
There were like crowds around this thing, and I'm like, this thing has something. And of course, it's been in the European market for a long time. I don't know. Volkswagen is just the weirdest company. Like, I don't know why they didn't bring over the Amarok. I don't know why it took them so long to bring the
Golf R wagon.
All this great stuff, right? So I was like, okay, we got to get ourselves one of these. It's got a lot of kind of that it factor, which translates to views, which translates to revenue. That's the reason we bought the Cybertruck, even though it was 100K, right? So back then, I want
to say, just as an aside, I have followed the series you did on that thing. You're getting a crap ton of views.
We're doing well.
You might even pay for the sticker of that car.
No, we're not that close.
Best ROI you've ever had is that damn Model T.
Yeah, we got
oh my God. I think it paid for the Cybertruck.
It did. Probably, yeah, because we got like 5 million views on one of the videos and we took it to the dealership and tried to have them work on it. Anyway, I'm thinking, okay, this is a vehicle that's going to be interesting. It's going to hopefully pay for itself. And back then, you figure the price is going to be between 50 and 60,000. That's where I was at in my head. We actually got a phone call. I called Volkswagen because I said, hey, we want to get one of these. Usually companies are happy. Well, except maybe now Toyota, when we bought a Tacoma and broke it. But for the most part, they're usually happy because the car gets a lot of exposure. Yeah. And
I think they have a voodoo doll of you in the Toyota headquarters in Dallas.
Yeah, they might
stick you and Andre together.
In between them, Volkswagen came back to me like, yeah, we'll help you. There was a dealer in Pennsylvania who reached out to us, and he said, I'll give you the first allocation. You pick the colors. And I said, done, because it was, also a chance to road trip it. So we're going to pick it up and road trip it, which is kind of fun. And I kind of thought, well, $50,000 to $60,000. So tell me the pricing now that the pricing.
Can I ask you how you spec'd it?
It's the first edition.
It's
going to be the one that's.
Of course.
Because you got to get it first.
Okay, so here's the good news.
Yeah, okay.
Because you're old, you have wisdom. I think that's the best way of putting it. You have a lot of wisdom.
If I had a lot of wisdom, I would have bought
the lot of wisdom.
ID Buzz.
So you were right. Between 50 and 60,000 is right, but it's like by the skin of your teeth by 60,000. 59,000 base price.
It's okay. I'm okay with that.
You want the first edition?
Yeah.
65,000.
I'm good with this Volvo, right? Another three row. The EX90.
Yeah. 100 grand.
81, and if you get the one that's out there, the ones with the bells and whistles.
Yeah.
90,000.
Yeah, but here's the problem. Maybe not a problem. So it's not competing with that. It's competing with a Toyota minivan.
Yeah.
It's competing with the Kia minivan. And even I think those are overpriced at 50 grand. So at this point, you figure you're $10,000 more for a vehicle that has less usability. Yeah. And I don't mean range, I mean in packaging.
Yeah.
The packaging of that VW is terrible.
You know what we could do with that too? We could lease it, right? Which is the way you protect yourself.
Okay, my audience knows, they know how I feel about debt. I'm not a...
I know I'm not a big... But the problem is the depreciation of electric vehicles has been so severe.
Oh, painful.
Painfully. But by leasing it, you're kind of protecting yourself from that, right? You can set a budget, and you can say, this is how much you're going to pay for it for the next 3 years.
Yeah.
And, you know, the buyout is this much, and the real value will be 50% less, but that's okay, because I can just give it back.
So I'm going to...
I'm not saying I'm leasing it, I'm just saying...
Okay, you and I disagree about this.
Yeah.
So,
only electric vehicles.
No, hold on a minute.
You also get the discount even if it doesn't qualify, so that's built into the lease. You understand, right? The $7,500.
I get that, but here's the thing. Yeah. So Roman and I disagree about this. We both have bought cars publicly on our shows.
Yes.
And
the first car I ever leased in 15 years was that Leaf. First one.
But that was a little bit of a...
Right, $9 a month.
That's movie magic, you're doing, $9 a month. Yeah. But he and I disagree about this, where he doesn't necessarily looking to get to make money on those cars. I don't see it as a bad thing if I'm going to buy the car and it happens to be the market is strong.
I'm going to just stop you there for a sec. I hate drinking out of the bottle. I look like an idiot. Gavin, our videographer, can you get me a glass, please, so I don't look like...
Says the billionaire.
God, it's so far from
so
that,
I'm going to suggest, and I think this is, I think there's an opportunity with the buzz.
Yeah.
I think you do buy it.
Okay, and then take a 50% loss.
No, but you get rid of it inside of 2 months.
Yeah, that's possible. We've done that.
Because if it's still the new hotness, you'll get out of it quick.
It's a good idea.
What I would do.
We were going to do that with the Cybertruck. We were going to initially keep it for a little bit, and then there's this agreement you sign that you can't basically sell it for a year. And then people just kind of were watching the videos. Usually we get maybe 10 videos out of the vehicle we buy, and this thing still has like buzz around it. So we just keep making videos, you guys keep watching them, and you know, that's why we held on to it. And I don't know, is Tesla gonna sue us if we sell it? I don't think so. I mean, I've heard that what they do is they forbid you to buy, they blacklist you to buy any other Teslas.
That's actually helping you.
Yeah, I know.
You've lost enough money with Teslas for a lifetime.
I mean, come on, think about this business strategy. Your best customers, this is like number 6 Tesla that we bought, right? If you sell it, they're gonna blacklist you. Oh, you bought 6 already, but that's too many, so we're gonna keep you from buying any more.
The amount of money you lost in a Tesla, I was able to buy a real Porsche.
No. No, Motor Man, that is not correct. All right, while we're at it, we're just having fun here. Let's have a Porsche discussion very quickly, okay?
Okay, let's have a...
All right. No, I'm good, thanks.
This is the point that I tell him that I'm going to sue Porsche?
Yeah, why are you suing Porsche?
I'm suing Porsche. I'm mad as hell.
All right, why are you suing Porsche?
Okay, so those of you that know about my personal car, I've got a GT3 Touring, and I decided I wanted to make it my own.
Thank you, Gavin.
And when I bought the car... Of course, it was the one model year you couldn't get the inserts into the seat. You couldn't get the Pepita or the tartan seats, which is a classic Porsche look.
Yeah, and then you took matters into your own hand.
I took matters. Exactly. I hacked the system. I got the sports seats. I found a trimmer to do the thing. I bought the separate set of foams. So I have 2 sets of foams, one from the factory that has the black, and one also factory foam, but it has the tartan. Of course, there were people that were haters on my choice. But when you see the car in person, it just pops.
It works.
It so works. The gentian blue with the cognac interior
and
the black watch plaid.
I think the gentian blue is a new guard's ride. It's like the one that everybody is getting now.
But the problem is everybody gets it and gets a black interior and it ruins the whole thing.
Yeah, I think.
So what happens is you get this interior with a cognac and it makes the color pop. So of course, as I'm going through the machinations of what I want to do, I realize, wait a minute. If I'm going to buy this tartan myself, why don't I make a frunk mat for the car that's made out of the tartan and do cognac leather trim? Like, this is a genius idea, I'm thinking to myself, right?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
So I do it, and I do my video. I go to Quail just this past Friday, Porsche reveals the Turbo S 50th anniversary with a front mat that's tartan.
Oh, but dude,
I'm suing their ass.
Dude, they came up with that like 15 years ago.
No, they didn't.
That's the way corporations work. Come
on,
you know how that works. They have
that
in the pipe.
I got one hell of an attorney.
They've had that, you know. They probably some German dude came up with that in Stuttgart, like 1972.
I'll settle out of court for a free ST. How about that?
All right. Let's talk about the ST. So we both driven the ST.
Yes.
And it's like the new hotness. Right, for a while there, it was like...
It's like classic hotness. It's not the new hotness. It's the classic hotness.
It's a new hotness. It's basically...
GT3 RS is the new hotness.
Why don't you... Yeah, all right. Well, no, the GT3 RS came out before the ST.
Yes, but it is still the new hotness because it is the Skittles. It is the crazy color with the wing that says, look at me. I call it a douchebag wing. I'm not, I don't know if I can say that on Roman's show.
Yeah, so the difference between the... Now we're really in deep... Porsche weeds here.
We really are. On
yeah,
weeds,
yeah. And if you're a listener of Spike's Car Radio, you may want to tune out at this point because I like. So I used to get this. I used to run with Spike's sister, Beth.
Oh yes, I know this.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. She was my running buddy.
Yeah.
So when you know Spike had his show, I started watching it because I knew Beth, and then I started listening to his podcast. But those guys are like you know they look at Porsches like wine, right? Mm-hmm. Like there's like every one of them is just a little bit different, mm-hmm. and I listen to it and I find it fascinating, and at the same time I find it utterly silly, mm-hmm. right? Because you have to have so much money when you start collecting Porsches, like you start collecting wine bottles, right? Mm-hmm. Because these are you know, 10, 15, 50 times more expensive, mm-hmm. And so you know the new hotness is the ST, and why is it? You want to tell them what makes the ST so special?
Okay, so the ST, if we're just breaking it down to its most root level, it is effectively a GT3 RS Touring. What does that mean? It's got the upgrades of the GT3 RS, so it's got the engine, it's got a little bit less torque, but the big thing is it's got a different flywheel and a different clutch, so it's way lighter. What they do is they go through the entire car and they take millimeters out of it. They take just grams, very small grams out of the way.
This is the wine connoisseur view.
No, I get it. I've got the disease. I am at the altar of
Porsche. True and silly at the same time.
I used to be the Lotus guy, and we're going to talk about the Emir in this discussion.
In a second, yeah.
And what the thing is it more, is it a better car than my car? No, it is not. But there is an experience to it. It has a heavier clutch. The feel is a heavier clutch.
I would say too heavy, but go ahead.
But that's the beauty of it. It works with the personality of the car. And I would argue it is a better overall. It's not supposed to be a track machine because one of the big things that changes, it doesn't really have adjustable dampers. What it does is it controls body roll, where my car does have adjustable dampers.
So full disclosure, I'm kind of a contrarian. So the first review I watched...
He always likes saying no.
True that. So first review I watched of that before I even got behind the wheel, right? Because I wanted to get a sense of what other people thought was basically the Jason Fenske and Jason Kniezma review where they reviewed it together.
Yeah.
And I like both those guys. Jason... Kniezma is so talented mm-hmm. and so creative, and Fenske's a good friend of mine, and he's just got this logical brain, and those guys just swooned over the car. And when somebody swoons over the car, my first reaction when I get behind the wheel is, all right, what's wrong with this? Because I always think that if too many people are, you know, following the lemming over the cliff, I don't want to be the first lemming.
Right? I get it. I have the same approach.
So I got in the car, and I was in the canyons above Malibu, right? And I started driving, and I started driving it hard, and I immediately I got it. I was like, this thing is, like, directly tied into my brain. That man-machine meld just happens instantaneously.
You're old enough to remember this. Do you remember the movie Firefox?
Yes, sure.
Where
I love Firefox.
Clint Eastwood stole the Russian airplane.
Yes.
And the only guy that ever flew it that was in the West... The big piece of advice he gave him is, you must think in Russian. And that, I feel that way about this car. You must think in German.
So you get in the thing and you're like,
blended with the car.
Guten Tag, Herr St. Wie geht's? Ich bin Roman. Du oder sie?
Du sprichst sehr gut Deutsch.
Nein, my Deutsch ist so gut. Anyway, so I'm in this car and I'm flying through the canyons, right? And I'm loving this thing. And then I'm like, this is true. It's a wonderful car. And then I like slow down and I'm like, no, this thing is just a pain in the ass to drive slow because Fenske was talking about this great induction noise and this great exhaust note and you hear all the mechanical sounds of the symphony and it just sounded like noise to me, right? When you're just driving around.
This is where we, again, let's do it in unison. You are old.
And when you're getting your Star...
You are a cranky old
when
man.
When you're getting your Starbucks, it's just a
What are the
pain
two Muppets
the
that sit up in the... In
oh, yeah,
the,
those two, yeah.
Yeah,
what are
Mortimer
those
co- and something or other.
Yeah, the,
that's you.
Dude,
which
you,
means I'm one of them.
Dude, you just rated yourself. I mean, worse than me, right? You just... Who knows that reference? Anybody who knows
that's
that reference?
That's true. I did. Yeah, I did. No, the kids today all love Muppets because Disney brought it back.
Yeah. Anyway, so that was my take on it.
But you're missing the point.
Well, the point is, this is not going to be your only car.
Oh, no.
This is going to be like your
fifth. That's your fifth car. Oh,
yeah,
exactly. That's exactly
so,
what it is.
So it'll be that weekend car when you go out and you go fog the canyons and you love it. But I like to look, I had this rule when I was younger where I only wanted to own one car.
Mm-hmm.
And now, of course, I've broken that rule many times. But I just wanted the one ultimate car that does it all. And so I still have that kind of approach to reviews. And I know I shouldn't. And I realized when we were talking that this is not going to be the car that you're going to be driving to Starbucks. Or maybe you will. I don't know. But
so okay, no, you're not. I'm going to tell you. I have unique experience.
You tell me your call.
Because I own one of these. Yeah. I own a GT3 Touring.
Right, yeah.
And
minus the
I
wing.
Have,
that's the difference,
well,
by
that,
the way.
It's a little bit. It's the wing. The front end's a little bit different. This is on the 992s.
Right.
The front end's different. Now you can get it with a PDK where the 991.2 GT3 Touring, you couldn't. But I'm telling you from personal experience, I own one of these cars. I've had it for 10 months. I have a total of 3,000 miles. Most of those miles are a function of me driving it to military car shows and back. That's it. I do use it for like cruises around Palos Verdes with my buddies, but I do not take it to Costco. I do not take it for like the coffee
right,
or the ice
right.
cream run. And as such, a car even more rare, which the 992 ST is, you're going to do it even less. That's the only problem with these cars. People are afraid to use them. And I could sit here and give people,
I could
yell at them for that, but I'm guilty of doing
that. Oh, but at least you drive it.
I do drive it.
You watch those auctions, and half those cars have like less than 100 miles on them. So and at that point, in my mind, that car stops being a car. At this point, it's a piece of art or it's a commodity.
Back to the auctions.
Yeah.
So the first, okay. Again, my audience knows this about me. This isn't the first 911 I tried to buy, like a GT car. The first one I tried to buy was a 2019 Speedster.
Mm.
They laughed in my face.
Yeah.
That car at a base price of $275,000, most of them went out for about $350,000. One of them just sold at the auctions in Pebble Beach for $775,000.
Yeah,
at Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I know.
But here's the reason why it's worth so much. That one's worth so much. 150 miles.
Yeah.
It means you can't drive it.
Right, but what that's...
It's worthless. That one to me is worthless.
I agree. You know, all those old Ford GTs, right? Those second
generation. Oh, I want one so bad, the new one? Excuse me, the 0506?
Right, yeah. But those...
I missed the boat. I should have bought one for 175.
Yeah, for a long time, they were like 175, 200, and then they just would...
Like a dumbass that didn't move fast enough. I was too cheap.
Anyway, let's talk Lotus.
Talk Lotus.
You just drove the car that I, you know, was thinking about buying at some point. But
let me
then
tell you a funny quick story before we get into Lotus.
Okay.
So, my lady friend and I went to Pebble Beach together.
Nice.
And the idea was to drive up, and I said,
"I feel afraid that she'd meet some billionaire." You're rolling the dice there.
I have a GT3 Touring. What are you saying?
Moto man.
No, she'd meet a guy with a 992 ST.
Or worse.
So I was like, hey, what? They're going to give us an Amira. Why don't we drive the Amira up? And she said, no, we're not driving an Amira up because I can't put my luggage in the car. I'm like, what? Really? So I got a Hyundai Sonata N-Line to drive up there, which was the smartest decision I ever made. Because get this, 300 horsepower, level 2 autonomy, and I got, you ready for this? 36 mpg.
Yeah, it's good.
Amazing.
It's good.
We get up there and we're staying at the Quail.
Yeah.
So in this parking lot where it's F50, F40, Pagani, Ferrari, Hyundai. I would go up to people and they're trying to take a picture of the Pagani. I'm like, please, no more pictures of the Hyundai.
my joke was that, you know, she comes up to you and she's like, yeah, I met this guy. He's got some Ferrari, three letters. Let me think, G. I think there's a T and an O.
Anyway, so the Amira. So they gave us the Amira up there. And again, my own is about me. You know this about me. I was a Lotus guy.
Mm-hmm.
You think I'm bad with the Porsches? I was way worse with a Lotus.
Okay, so what's your call in the mirror?
So a couple things. So I'm
the
coming
everyday
from
driver guys.
I'm coming from two.
They have a mirror.
Two Elises, and when I say I went for two Elises, I didn't do it here with a Toyota engine where it was easy. I moved to England to buy one of these things and drive it on all the tracks in Europe, which I did. So here's the positive. The positive is it is so much better than any other Lotus you've ever driven.
Okay. So the Chinese have done well?
No.
Oh, okay.
That's where we get to the negative.
So,
and Lotus, by the way, we're here in a Volvo program, which owns the company, basically.
Well, Volvo was also bought by the Chinese, so is Lotus.
So the positives are, it is a Lotus through and through. Dynamically, it's a magnificent car to drive, dynamically. Once again, like the Evora, the Toyota engine actually works very, very well. Number three.
It's a beautiful car. I love the design.
I was going to get to that. The proportions are stunning.
Yeah.
Like, you would be shocked. I'm joking about the Hyundai and the parking lot gag, but literally, I'm parking next. I have pictures of it. I can give it to you for this podcast if you want. I have pictures of it next to an F40, and people would go out of their way to look at the Amira because the proportions are so beautiful.
Okay.
And of course, they gave me one in British Racing Green.
Of course.
Which was beautiful.
Yeah.
Then the bad. It still smells like the glue of an Elise.
No. No, no, no.
The infotainment system is not as terrible as an Alpine radio like in my Elise, but sometimes it wants to work, sometimes it doesn't.
Mm.
Or simple things. Like, when people ask me about my Elise, the car, even with the Rover K-Series engine that I had, super reliable.
Yep.
The things that didn't work were the roll-down windows wouldn't open. Mm. I'm not even joking. Or the lock wouldn't unlock, and I didn't live in the ice storms. Here, the new one was, you want to open the trunk? Sometimes it just wouldn't want to open.
Mm.
Maybe tomorrow, try again, it will open.
Yeah.
Stupid things like that.
Back to,
and that's where even the Chinese money didn't sort it out.
Mm. So given the choice between that and a Cayman?
Cayman all day long, okay. 8 ways to Sunday.
All right, fair.
And that's the thing. You can get a Cayman. Did you know this? That a Cayman GTS 4-liter, when you and I first drove them, were $89,000 base price. They're $105,000 base price now.
Same thing with the Boxster. Same problem.
And it's but you're talking the price of the Amira, and even though everyone has a Cayman, I would still get the Cayman for GTS 4-liter.
But the Cayman also depreciates, unlike the 911, and, you know.
Not as much as the Amira will.
No, but I'm saying
the Amira will drop like a stone.
Right, yeah. But
not right now, but it'll drop like a stone. And I love Paul and the guys out there.
So hold off. Hey, let's talk about another thing that I think is on people's minds, and that is, I've been reading a lot of stories where people are basically foretelling the death of electric vehicles, right? They're saying that dealers don't want to sell them, manufacturers don't want to build them, people don't want to buy them. Just a lot of wringing of hands in a very gleeful way, saying, I told you so, Toyota was right to go hybrid. And I have, once again, being a contrarian, I have an exact opposite opinion of that. I think the problem with electric cars was that they were just too expensive. Mm-hmm. And once, like any other product, once they hit their buoyancy point in terms of where the market is, then they start selling. And I think what you're going to see in this quarter and the next quarter is that electric car sales are going to be up, not down. Because like the Leaf, like my wife just, I'll give you an example. My wife just bought an iX, BMW iX, and it was 4,000 miles, 4 months old, and it was down $30,000. And the reason she bought it was because she walked in and wanted to buy an X5. And there was this iX sitting there, and I'm like, I wasn't trying to push her on electric. I'm like, hey, try this. So she got in the thing, and the reason she bought it was $30,000 over under sticker, CPO.
New or used? Oh, used.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, 4,000 miles.
Yeah.
CPO'd, and she hates going to gas stations. That was it. Mm-hmm. And then she drove it, and she's like, this thing's fast. I'm like, yeah, they're fast.
It is fast.
Yeah.
M50 or M60?
M50. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And she's driving an electric car. She never has to go to a gas station again. She's still worried about, road tripping in, and I get that, but she loves the car. And
she could find another car somewhere. Maybe she knows somebody that's got a couple of cars.
Yes. Okay. We have plenty of cars you can drive across country. But I'm saying my wife was not an electric car fan. This was not something, but I know automotive journalists often do this. They use their relatives or friend as a barometer of where the market is. And that's what I'm doing here. So, of course, a sample of one is not ideal. But I just think that, and people say I'm promoting electric cars, I don't have a horse in this race. I love, we have a Ram 2500 Cummins, we have a Mustang GT, and we have a Cybertruck. The power plant is not important.
You still have oil running through your veins.
Yes, of course. Yeah, I will never, never forget, the sound of that Mustang.
Yeah. I don't think I would ever confuse you with being a tree hugger.
No, I'm not. No. Certainly not there. But just as an appliance to live with on a daily basis, electric cars are just a lot easier. There's downsides. So you have to have a place to charge them. So if you live in an apartment, probably not going to work for you. You know, if you're cross-country tripping them, probably not going to work for you. But if you have a place to charge it, level two at home, just much easier because they seem to meld better with your phone for some reason. I know they shouldn't, but they do.
Let me cover a couple points for you.
And you never have to go, like, maintenance, no maintenance, no gas stations, you know, no nothing. No oil in the ground.
Let me give you a couple
of points. No dying in the gas station. No dying in your garage if you leave the door closed. Anyway, go ahead. Your turn.
So a couple of points. First, the big positive about electric cars that no one tells you.
Yes, let's hear that.
It literally puts time back in your day. Now, granted, it's all based on the provisions he already told you. You got to have a house. You got to have a charger.
Yeah.
You got to have that. If you don't, it's a waste of your time. You're pissing up a road.
Especially in California.
Anywhere. You've got to have the charger.
Yeah.
So, and when I say put time back in your day, what I mean is you roll into the garage at night, you plug it in, the next morning you get up, you never have to spend any time in the day looking for energy. You don't realize how big of a deal that is until you live it. I didn't know it until I lived it, because as you know, I've got the level two in the hangar.
Yeah.
It's magnificent.
Yeah, makes life easy.
That aside.
Fair.
Completely disagree with you about the next two quarters being up and the reasons why EV sales are down. Let's start with number one. The sales will not go up. They will not go up, A, because you have too many days supply of EVs in the market right now. They're already not selling with incentives on them. They're not going to continue to sell because, B, the economy is going this way, badly. And I say that for a couple reasons, not just because of rich people up at Pebble Beach, but huge data point we just got about 2 weeks ago. Car loan defaults are up 30%. And that's telling me two things. It's telling me, number one, cars, yes, are too expensive. And number two, the banks were too freewheeling with their money two years ago.
10-year loans on a car?
Stupid.
That's crazy.
Now, huge provision. You know this about me. They don't. I am, if you guys know Dave Ramsey, I am a Dave Ramsey, like, acolyte.
He hates cars.
I do not. No, he loves cars. No, dude, he's got an Aston Martin.
He hates financing cars.
No, that's exactly. I'm the same way. I do not finance anything. I don't owe a dime.
He thinks cars are just a bottomless pit.
Well, no, they're not a bottomless pit. But the bottom line is, you don't want the. He's got this great saying, which I steal from him.
Okay.
Don't let the car own you. You own the car.
But that's, you can say that about anything. Your house.
I would say this, and that's how I live my life. I own that lock, stock, and barrel. But the point is, the banks were too freely willing with loans.
Your spouse?
When the numbers, actually, not mine. But,
your dog?
So they were too freely willing with the numbers back in the day, 2 years ago, and now basically the chickens are coming home to roost. And that has a huge impact on the EV market, because the EV market is even higher in terms of average price, transaction price, than an ICE car. Now we're starting to see, if you go look at Kelley Blue Book, the average price of a car went from 50, now finally went down to 48, on its way down even further south. So that's why I disagree with you. There are other reasons, but that's the headline why I disagree with you.
I think that the manufacturers severely, because of the secondary markets, you're right. I mean, EVs just tanked on the secondary market, so it's hard to sell an EV at like 60,000 when a year later it's worth 30,000. So I think that forced the manufacturers, and you can see it in like the Lightning, right? Mm. Lightning up to like 90,000 at one point, and I think that thing's down 20, 25,000 now. And I think, like I said, I think they've found their place in the market.
Yeah.
And I think when they find their place in the market, people will buy them, and they will be willing to try them. And I think it becomes, at that point, less political and more practical. Like, what happened with EVs is it became political. It became a statement. If you're a Democrat, you're wearing your greenness on your sleeve. If you're a Republican, you're proving that the world is not overheating, right? And now I think really what motivates people to buy cars or not buy cars is how much they cost. And the problem with EVs was that they were just political and they were too expensive. They're still political, but now they're not too expensive.
Okay, so let's separate that. I want to unpack that a little bit more. Number one, the average price of a car, whether it was 50 or now 48,000,
yes,
that is too much. Because the average income in the U.S. is somewhere in the low 60s. And if you actually take the average home and try to buy the average car, you will be broke in a short period of time.
So let me ask you this question. I
agree. I want to get to another point. I want to get to another point first.
Go for it.
The other side of the coin when it comes to EVs, and you brought up the thing about political, I'm going to slightly disagree with you. I'm not going to call it political. It was a culture war. There's a culture war raging in this country. We don't want to make this a political debate here, but there's a culture war raging in every aspect of our society right now as it relates to our lane, because everybody likes to scream at us to stay in our lane, so we're going to stay in our lane. The culture war is we need to do EV at the exclusion of everything else. There was never any discussion of, well, what about synthetic fuels? Or what about the idea of very high efficient internal combustion engines? It was a number of progressives that got into governments both in Brussels as well as in Washington and said, EVs to the exclusion of everything else, my mind is already made up, don't bother me with the facts. So rather than saying it was political, my retort to you, which is somewhat in agreement, it was simply a culture war, and there wasn't enough votes to vote against the culture war.
Okay, but so let me ask you this question. You said that cars are too expensive, and I completely agree.
Yes.
So why is that? Is that because, you know, prices got so high during COVID and then the chip shortage, or was it because of corporate greed, or was it because of some other factor? Why do you think cars are so expensive?
Okay, so there isn't one particular answer, and this goes back to, I would argue, the culture war. Our society's changed significantly over the past, I want to say, 60 years.
Right.
I would say, and this is probably way too much information, not exactly what you were expecting in an answer, the society started to change with the counterculture revolution in the 60s. Now, there's an argument as to how that came about. If you really want to get into that, we can have a discussion another day.
Yeah, that's a long
However,
discussion.
Over time, our society has changed. So we got to the point where the world basically... I don't know how to do this without getting into politics. I'm trying to avoid getting into politics.
It's a simple question. You're like, I'm asking why are cars too expensive, and you're like going back to the 60s.
I'm trying to simplify it as much as I can. Okay. Cars are too expensive because we've gotten to a point where our life has creeped too much. Does that make any sense?
Our life expectancy?
No. Our creep in life has gotten too much, meaning I want a bigger, more expensive house, or I've got to have a $1,600 telephone, or I've got to be able to have both parents work outside the home, and then I have to pay for daycare.
Yeah,
meaning our lifestyles have creeped drastically, and we can't afford them.
We somehow have lost this idea that, you know, less is more.
And exactly.
And that, like, if you own too much stuff, it owns you versus you owning it. Right, that has gone out the window. Yeah, maybe because
there isn't a contentment. Again, I'm trying to boil this down without getting political.
Oh, but you got,
but like, there isn't a contentment anymore.
And then recently, of course, with social media, right? It's like, hey, look at me, you know? Mm-hmm. It's like, I'm living my best life. Are you?
Yeah.
And part of that is, of course, I've got the best toy. I've got the biggest car. I've got the blah, blah,
now,
blah.
Now, part of that, this is where I'm trying to get away from the political.
Okay, but that doesn't answer the question.
Hold on a minute. Right. I'm going to get to some of the key points that underlie that.
All right.
So if I want the $1,600 telephone, or if I want the, these are not $300 glasses, but let's say for the sake of discussion, they are $300 glasses, at some point,
Parker Warby,
the companies have to figure out, okay, how do we manufacture and still make a profit? That's when we get into hollowing out the middle class. And where I'm trying to avoid getting political.
Okay,
so what you've done is you've taken jobs away from West Virginia and you shipped them to China. So what's happening is the people that
been
were...
That's happening for like the last 50 years.
That's why I went back to the 60s. Right. You see where I'm going with this?
Yeah, sure, I get
so
it.
The
like
idea,
when the steel mills were closed.
Exactly.
Back, you know.
And so what we're doing is we're paying for the freight of decisions made 30, 40 years ago. That's what's happening. And that's why you have two,
right, I'll give you,
you have both parents in the home working outside the home. That's why you have to pay for daycare. And all of a sudden, your dollar is stretched more.
So here is the conundrum that
yes.
I see, right? We see especially in trucks, our truck channel. So people would be like, we want more work truck reviews. You know, trucks are way too expensive. And I agree, trucks, you know, like Tacoma starts at...
But do people actually really watch those videos when you do them?
No, that's a problem.
That's what I get. I get the same thing.
Yeah, they say in the comments, we want work trucks, and then we have a work truck at the office right now.
Yep.
And you do a video with it, and it's a giant yawn.
Exactly.
And the same, I think, to some extent, the same thing happens in the marketplace, right? You know, they have work trucks, and obviously they go to fleet sales, but the ones that people want or desire or covet are the platinum version of whatever truck it is.
Absolutely.
And then you get into this 10-year loan problem, because now you're looking at a truck that's not $38,000 but $68,000.
So let's get back to the trying not to be political, more cultural.
Yes.
Part of this issue is, I got a joke around with my girlfriend. You know the saying of make America great again?
Yes.
I got a new one.
Okay.
Make shaming great again, MSGA. And my MSGA is, I'm going to shame you for putting $500 down.
Isn't that cancel culture? 50...
No, just shaming is different. I'm not canceling you, I'm just shaming you.
Okay.
I don't want to cancel anybody.
Doesn't canceling start with shaming?
I'm going to shame you into, how dare you put $500 down on a $50,000 Mercedes and say you're going to pay $2,000 a month. Basic home economics. We need to bring that back into schools so people don't make ridiculous financial decisions. Because part of this is not just hollowing out good jobs. And again, I'm not a union supporter, so let's not even get into that. So I don't sound like a union supporter. But I'm talking
about...
You
sound like a union supporter.
I do sound like, but I'm not.
Good jobs. Could be a pin.
I'm saying we got to get back to the
UA
basic
local
fundamentals of our economy. And right now we're sending too much outside of our country. Let's bring some of those. We can repatriate some of those jobs without the, oh, but we can't compete with China. Yes, you can. Southern states have proven they can do that. And I'll show you the proof. The car we're driving is built in
Charleston.
South Carolina.
Charleston, yeah.
Yes.
We're close. It's funny because it was funny. I was watching the presentation this morning about the EX90, right?
Yeah.
And you could tell it's like a Swedish company because they had the word Charleston up there. But never South Carolina, right? In America, we always be Charleston, right?
Yeah.
But because the Europeans don't have states, I think it's always like the city and not the state in America. Anyway, that's just an aside, and I could be wrong.
Well, I always find it funny that Germans and Swedes have a funny way of pronouncing southern towns. Like, you go to a Volkswagen program, it's always Chattanooga.
It is Chattanooga.
Chattanooga.
So when I was a TV reporter, and this is also pretty funny,
Tuscaloosa.
We had an anchor who was Spanish, right? Mm-hmm. And this is during the Sandinistas, and he would always be...
And these people had no idea what they were getting today.
Yeah, I know. And so he'd be like...
I think it's Mortimer and something like that. That's definitely... We're going to have to rename this podcast.
Like we would say Sandinista, right?
Yeah.
And they would be like, and the Sandinistas. Hey, chimichangas.
Yeah, you really dated yourself. But back to the point of affordability. All of this works into it's not just any one like gotcha. It's so many things were built upon a decision 60 years ago that have gotten us to this point.
All right, so what I want to see is 6 months from now, let's say beginning of first quarter 2025.
Yes, sir.
Let's have a bet. And I will bet you that electric car sales over the two closing quarters of 2024, third, fourth quarter, will be up, and you're going to say they're down.
Up from what?
Well, whatever they were in the second quarter. So, that'll be the baseline, the second quarter, and I'm going to tell you the third and fourth quarter.
Going to be up from the second quarter.
Quarter, yes. Mm-hmm. Electric car sales in this quarter and next quarter will be up. And you're saying they're going to be down. I'm going to say they're up.
Can we throw in the transaction price? Can we have it like a side dish of the transaction price has to be maintained? Because you can be easily a hero and sell more cars if you cut the price by $5,000, well, as Tesla has done.
And that's what happens. That's what's happening. And I think that's what should be happening.
I'm not making a bet based on lower prices.
All right. Well, then you've kind of conceded my point.
I haven't conceded your point.
My point is that the price is what determines whether people, all these people, like, it's funny. I just got this email from one of our viewers, and he had this very intelligent, like, 15-paragraph argument why electric cars suck, right? And I'm thinking to myself, you know, that's your politics talking, right? That's not like the market speaking. And I made that comment, and we got an argument, and we eventually came back. But I'm saying what determines whether electric cars will be successful or not is not all this kind of bullshit out there, like, oh, they burn, right? Mm-hmm. Ford just recalled 88,000 police explorers because of the risk of fire, right? People, it's hilarious. People say electric cars burn, and I'm like, what do you think's in the gas tank of your car?
Before I forget, I gotta say it, and we'll come back to this. At Pebble Beach, the Ford Probe One concept car was on the lawn at Pebble Beach.
Okay.
The owner driving it home in a trailer blew up in flames.
That's not good.
That sucks.
Yeah, that sucks.
So
a lot.
A valuable concept car just. The trailer just blew up in flames.
Yeah.
Anyway, go back.
Anyway, I was just saying, to me, I think what determines in America, specifically, not Norway, not Germany, but in America, will determine electric car adoption isn't the grid, isn't whether people think it's the cost. And if you can make them inexpensive enough, then I think that basic principles of an electric car will win over the internal combustion. And I'm not talking about like whether you believe in, you know, global warming or whether you don't believe in it. I'm just talking about the basics of what powers your car and how that affects you on a daily basis.
I disagree with you.
Okay, fair.
I'll tell you why I disagree with you.
All right, why?
And this kind of goes back to decisions made 60 years ago, then you layer on these decisions got us to this point.
Welcome to TFL history, where we
TFL politics.
It's
literally decisions that were made 60 years ago led to this point where you have the current regulators that are mandating these policies that have gotten us to this point where...
Hold on, I'm not done yet.
Where it is a one-size-fits-all solution. I will agree with you. It's not a grid or an infrastructure. Yes, it is right now. Once you fix that in 50 years, then in certain markets it'll work. It just won't work in every market.
All right.
Like, you're not going to do EVs in Montana. You're not going to do them in South America where you can do very cheap ethanol that doesn't compete with food stocks.
Sure, I get that. And if I were in Montana, I wouldn't want an EV.
You can't even do a diesel in Montana. I want a classic car. You ready for this?
Yeah.
1987.
Yeah.
Pontiac, 6,000 STE with a manual transmission.
Damn.
How cool is that?
Well, if you get that, I'll get a Sunbird.
Okay. Deal.
Deal.
Get ready to buy your Sunbird.
All right.
I'm finding one. You don't understand. I told my girlfriend that I'm going to buy her that car. She's like ready to leave me.
Okay. Hold on. Keep in mind, this is somebody who's bought an Aztec. So before you start bluffing.
There were three Aztecs at Concord to Lemon.
Yeah. Of course there were.
They also had a 780 Volvo, which that's not a Lemon. That was a beautiful car.
You know what I want? And we'll go back. Let's go back to cars. I was looking at. Before we go back to cars. Okay. So I've been slowly kind of buying all the cars that I had in my childhood.
Yeah.
And I'm very fortunate that I can do that. I hold my head up to that. But there's two cars that I still have not bought, and that's the end of it. I've kind of went and rebought.
Well, you bought a 944.
Yeah, I have a 944. I bought the RX-7, 300ZX, all that. The two cars that I haven't bought are an E36 M3. Oh. Right?
You're going to need some money.
Well, they used to be cheap.
Yeah, not anymore.
Not anymore. Yeah. And a Volvo 850 Turbo.
BR,
of course. Yeah. Those are the two that I still have to, you know, kind of relive. So I was on Bring a Trailer, and I was looking at E36 M3s, and man, that site is just a 25% premium over, like...
Oh, it's crazy.
It's crazy, yeah. I don't know what's happening with, like, those... Do you know what's happening with, like, Cars and Bids and Bring a Trailer? But the stuff there was just selling for numbers that were so out of whack.
This is a fascinating tale. If you look at it, what happened, it took the magic of like the RMs and the Goodings, and people started to put trust in it for the $30,000 car, $50,000 car, $100,000 car,
$1 million car.
And then overnight, meaning 10 years, people have no qualms paying $1 million for a car on Bring a Trailer. And once that happened, it went from you had to wait for either Scottsdale, Amelia, or Monterey. Now you can sell the car from the comfort of your own home any time of the year and not have to pay the $20,000 to go to Monterey.
Yeah.
That's the value of it.
Yeah, makes
sense.
So
all of a sudden, it's easier to buy the car and people are willing to pay more for it. But something interesting happened. Let's go back to me sitting at Gooding, looking up at that, I think it was an 89 or a 91 E320 convertible, like 19 grand. I'm like, I want one.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I missed out.
Oh, you should have bought it.
I should have bought it.
You should have bought it. There was I was watching the Mecum auction, and that's another one that I didn't own, but I would love. That's the first Z. They had a really nicely restored
240
that sold for like $26,000.
Such a good price.
It's a good price for a nicely restored
Z. For a nice one, yeah.
Yeah,
was it one of those cars that they restored by Nissan?
No, I don't think it was a Nissan.
I got a buddy of mine's got one. Those things are worth like 60, 70 grand now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I went to
a plaque and everything.
I went on a program with Nissan. This is, maybe you were there too, when they rolled out the historical collection in Nashville when they first moved to Nashville.
Oh, yeah. I was there.
Yeah, and they had a Z, a 240Z.
Yeah, at the Lane Museum.
Yeah, at the Lane. Yeah. And I drove that car because I've been, I've had three Zs in my life. And so I've always been a Z guy, and I drove that one, and I just fell in love with it.
I'm going to buy a Z32 at some point.
It's so perfectly balanced, you know, just the right amount of power, styling that
beautiful.
Is timeless.
Yamasan did a great job on
exactly.
that design. Totally agree.
It's all kind of been downhill, unfortunately.
Since Nissan's in such a bad position right now.
They are in a bad place right now.
I feel like it's
They're
almost
struggling.
Like they can't get out of their own way. You know, again, what are you and
I? I'm going to blame Carlos Ghosn on that. I think what he did was he mortgaged the company's future for the present, right? He saved the company, but at the cost of the future, right? New cars are the lifeblood of a company, and he just completely, like, castrated that company, and they still haven't dug their way back out of it.
See, I disagree. I think that, and this is an old Bob Lutz saying, there's no problem that good product can't fix.
But they haven't,
if they would have
no
like
money.
Okay. Again, I'm going to give you another saying. Yeah. The chief designer of Hot Wheels,
right,
about 10 years ago, Felix Holst, he had a great saying. Good design does not cost extra.
True that.
It costs the same to design a Nissan Rogue as it does, what's a good-looking mid-size crossover? Name one. I got it. Costs the same to design a Nissan Rogue as a Buick Envista.
Right.
And the Buick Envista's cheaper. Which would you rather have?
Envista.
Absolutely,
yeah,
because
sure.
It's a beautiful design.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
If you do like two or three cars like that, brings the company
but
back.
But the irony is they had that, like, I don't know if you remember, they had the Warrior concept for the Titan. Do you remember that? It was at the...
with that cool front end.
Yeah, at the Detroit Auto Show. Yeah, remember? And
yep.
They never built it.
Never built it.
I mean, they had some really cool design, and they just never... I don't know, it was too expensive. And then the stuff that would make a money, like the Frontier, right? They just let that sit.
I disagree. It's not about money, because you look at General Motors, they put way too much money into EVs. They had to catch up, so they went to their what used to be Daewoo and said, we need some cheap and cheerful. And the two best-looking cars, aside from the Corvette, that GM makes is the Trax and the Envista.
They are good-looking cars.
They're great-looking cars.
I got to be honest, I'm a big fan of the Suburban and Tahoe and Yukon. I think those are actually very good-looking cars as well. I just love those. Yeah, I love those big American cars.
There's I love something... that Sequoia, man. I think the Sequoia, I would do Sequoia these days.
Sequoia,
I think it's beautiful.
Is trouble.
Oh, well, they're all trouble.
Yeah.
That 3.5 turbo is kind of trouble.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think we are out of time because my videographer...
You don't want to argue politics and
communism anymore. No, I don't want to argue politics in Orange County. There's enough of that. There's enough of that here without us adding to it.
So he's being back. He wants to go back to being a communist in Boulder.
I don't want to go be.
They don't have
free refills
in Boulder because of people like
that. I love when people call me a communist and yet they have no clue as to what I think about the communists, right? Because they almost...
Yeah, because he was a communist. He came from a communist country.
I came from a communist country and there's nothing more that I hate than communism because, you know, they enslaved my... Anyway, it's another podcast. Well, thank you, Moto Man, again.
Always a pleasure. Really enjoyed this conversation.
Yeah, and if you guys want to go check your stuff out, what's your next kind of video that you're publishing?
Well, next one go... Oh, as a matter, you want to know what it is?
Yeah.
You're going to laugh.
Okay, almost done.
Our good friend, Craig Cole. You remember
Craig
Cole used to be at Roadshow?
Yeah, he's now at EV Pulse.
He and I did a three-part mini-series of a SWOT analysis of the big three.
Oh, I love
and
Craig.
And tomorrow, it's Ford. And you can imagine the discussion that is.
Yeah, Craig is just... He's got an old soul and a smart brain.
Guy.
Yeah, what a great guy.
Although, I do have coming up, I've got the... a very in-depth that thing about the Ford. I did the Mustang.
Yeah.
Living with three generations
that's
of Mustangs.
Cool. Yeah.
Very. I put a lot of work in that one. I'd love for you guys to check it out.
And by the way, we just bought a. I'll announce it here. We bought a '91 Range Rover pickup, Defender, and so we are selling our Mustang GT. So if you want a slightly used Mustang GT, in I forget what the name of the car, Velocity Blue, I think. It's up for sale. Shoot us an email at info@tflcar.com and we'll let you know all the details. And once again, thank you, man, for joining us. And thank you guys for taking time out of your day to listen to this rousing non-political discussion.
Really enjoyed this.
Yeah,
it was fun as
enjoyed
always.
It as well. See you next time.
Take care, man.
See you next time, guys. Bye.
Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.